Hello and welcome to the Unsightly American Soccer Podcast, post-World Cup, pre-apocalyptic, but just barely, edition. I'm your host, Hal Phillips, and this is part two of the podcast. Unlike part one, this portion eschews political matters and delves into the World Cup just completed with colleague Stephen Myers, our Spanish correspondent. The overriding theme here is the tournament's best 11, the all-tournament team, as it were. But that bleeds off into several discussions of the final in particular and other matters. One note, in assembling the best 11, we originally talk about David Villa as one of the strikers, quite rightly, alongside Diego Forlan. But it seems we forgot about Villa midway through the discussion and entertained other strikers in his place. Oh well, let's get to the discussion.
Hey Hal, one thing I haven't seen, the all-tournament team. Now, I'm sure that I could pick out three or four without mistake, but I'd like to hear you flesh them out because I haven't seen it yet, bro. We know who the goalkeeper is, and San Ike, boy, what a save he made on that Robin one-on-one, huh, to save the victory for Spain. Well, so he's the goalkeeper.
I think you're absolutely right that he saved the game.
Right.
But I think that what you say right there is telling to me when I think back, and it's been... what, almost 2 weeks? No, a week and a half since the final, is that Spain was so dominant in a lot of ways. And everyone was so relieved when they won because they were the better team. And the Dutch were cynical about it. But the language is important, again, that saved them. Because they were a goal away from losing that game. As much as we crap on the Dutch for ruining the game, quote-unquote, they could have won it.
I think there were 7 or 8 moments in the game, right, where either team could have had the victory goal. I think maybe 7, 6 or 7, certainly. I think the Dutch might have had 4.
I'm looking at these pictures here on the FIFA website because I'm looking for your best 11. I haven't found it yet. But I did notice that here's a big difference between the Spanish national football team and any team that wins any kind of national championship in the United States is that when they won the game, they didn't put on special corporate caps and T-shirts in order to sell more T-shirts and caps. They put on the red shirts that they probably would have preferred to have worn.
Of course.
Because those are the national colors.
Yeah, that's right.
And we're tribal, like we've said. And there's nothing wrong with being tribal.
Yeah, it is essential. Mind you, it's been fostered and fostered in many places, but yeah, it's the norm.
We're looking for the best, the best 11.
There's always a team chosen. Let's you and I talk about it as a starting point. Hal.
Okay, well, let's talk about the guy who's the man of the tournament. Diego Forlan is in the team. Can we agree on that?
Oh, goodness gracious. And what a beautiful man. Shit.
A tennis player.
Every touch on the ball was just beautiful. Also, his whole body and mind understood what was the right rhythm with which to play the ball. You know, he was changing the pace or serving the pace of the moment impeccably. Diego Forlan, God, absolutely the player of the tournament.
No, it's really interesting. I've seen, Uruguay play several qualifiers in CONMEBOL. Every once in a while you see a game on Fox Soccer Channel, and you often see highlights of Olympic qualifiers, or I should say World Cup qualifiers. And Forlan has been playing for Uruguay, for some time. But, I've seen him play for Atletico, I've seen him play for Man U, and he's a different player when he plays withdrawn striker for his country. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy didn't come out of nowhere.
Didn't come out of nowhere.
We all know him. And, I mean, he's a first-class striker. He has good days and bad days. He was transcendent in this tournament, and I'm not sure why. I'm not sure anyone knows.
Anyway, going back to the tournament, mate, so Casillas would be the keeper.
Well, let's talk about that. He had one great save in the final. He wasn't called upon to do a whole lot. I think you could make an argument for a couple of different keepers who played better over the course of the tournament because they were besieged in a way he never was.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I saw though that he received the award for the best keeper.
He did.
So I think I do think your point is well given. There are some folks we could talk about. I'll tell you. I was really impressed with that big brick shithouse German, young German guy. You can see that he's going to be around for a long time.
Neuer.
And his positioning and his calm and his smarts. Of course, I was always hoping that the ball would enter the German goal, always. But he was always in position. What a big bitch he is. Right, I'm very impressed with his smarts.
The keeper for Uruguay was excellent, and not necessarily with, like, crazy saves, but the Uruguayans were played some very long and very frantic matches, and he never really made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
He was under siege, for the better part of the tournament, almost every game, in a way that Casillas was not. But, you know, mm-hmm. In a way, Casillas had a much more nerve-wracking tournament because they were supposed to win. It would have been very Spanish for him to fuck up somehow and cost them a game when it mattered, because that's what's happened to them. And he is San Iker, so he's got pressure on him.
Yeah, and there was no margin of error, was there? Because they couldn't score. They could only score sufficiently to win, but no more than that. It was 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, 1-0.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in the semifinal, he did make that one excellent save, although we agreed that most dangerous moment should have gone to the far post. Hal, I thought that Sergio Ramos was outstanding for Spain, consistently dangerous. I'm not given to be complimentary because he plays for Real Madrid and he's a bit of a egomaniacal prick. And did I mention he plays for Real Madrid?
I did.
But I thought he was just great. I thought he was really great, carrying the ball, consistently dangerous. So I think that he might be an all-tournament type player. Don't you reckon that Xavi would be the brain of the World Cup 11?
Well, here's the thing: the exercise with selections like this are. You have to start with Spain, but then you have to limit it to those who must be on it. Because then you have to sprinkle them around to, so many, 31 other teams, perhaps. And you can't just have a tournament team that is all Spanish.
Well, of course not. I'm not going that place.
No, I know you're not.
And I think you saw more games. So who were the notable players, Bluto? It's your podcast and you the man. Who were the great players of the tournament, did you think?
Well, I'll do what I'll practice what I preach. I won't include Ramos because I thought Ramos, while consistently dangerous, amounted to nothing because here's a team that barely scored enough goals to win a World Cup, and he plays right back. And sure, he attacked a lot, but ultimately, I don't think anything that he did led to a goal. So he was the ultimate Roberto Carlos for me. He looked dangerous always and never amounted to much. And he's also, like you say, a petulant fuck that I don't enjoy watching because he, like so many other players in this tournament, are just so... All they want to do is stand up and, like, shake their fists as if holding a card to the referee. They're just trying to get people thrown out in such an active way. It's discouraging. I don't like to see that. He's one of the worst that way. But Xavi, I think, is... for my money, if it wasn't Forlan, he was the man of the tournament. He was
right.
Just so in control. And so... I just love his deadpan Buster Keaton-like face.
That's right. He's a Buster Keaton and also a Robert Downey lookalike.
He looks like Robert Downey. Robert Downey, Xavi. Buster Keaton. Yeah, he's
right.
It just completely.
That's the other one you hit right.
Emotionless. He's a he's what's the word? He's an assassin. He just never. He's relentless.
And his work ethic is tremendous. Barca played last summer out here at Candlestick Park against Chivas. You know, the most popular team of Mexico, and I was able to go with our old schoolmate, Adam Wilner, and his family. They're a Barca family because of my nearness. They're a soccer family. And we sat in the eighth row. I mean, really, really 20 meters regularly away from Messi and Xavi doing their thing. Just off it. And Xavi's work rate is incredible. His head constantly on a swivel, constantly looking and with an awareness of where his teammates are. I said this in an earlier podcast. He's giving an example to every footballer in the world about how to play in the midfield.
I think that he's got to be on the team. I'm not going to give it to Iniesta, although I could. I'll come back to that. Maybe I'll default to him. But I think
Puyol, I wouldn't do it either.
Puyol.
I wouldn't do it either.
Puyol must be on the team because He scored goals. He defended like a madman. And when you win so many 1-0 games, that's on the defense. And he was better than Piqué. So he was the best defender, in my view, on Spain's team. So I've got Villa, I've got Xavi, and I've got Puyol from the Spanish team on my 11. And in there I've got Wesley Sneijder, my attacking midfielder.
Mm-hmm.
And Forlan is a striker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it.
And, you know, I think that I have Robin as my left midfielder. Because as petulant as he is, the man is difficult to deal with and could have won the World Cup for his country. If not for that save that we give Casillas credit for. That mm-hmm. goal wins the game for them. I honestly believe that if they had scored that goal, the Spanish would have thrown up on themselves.
Yep. Yeah, I think so also, that would have been the deciding goal.
And so I think we've got to give him credit. That leaves a right halfback. Can we put Landon Donovan on that team? I think that would be reaching. I would play Thomas Müller from Germany out of position at right halfback on my team.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So I still have a striker left, and I need a second center back, and I don't know who.
Yeah, you need the two. You need the two defenders on the side.
The guy that I was impressed with, I'm not sure he really deserved it because he got hurt, but the guy who impressed me in a way I've never really seen him before was this guy Diego Lugano, who was a center.
Yeah, is that the Uruguayan?
Yeah, the blonde guy. He was incredible.
Yeah, also another beautiful man to look at. Right, I thought he was tremendous. Also, the captain.
Yeah, and you can tell.
Yeah, it's a pity. It really is a pity he got injured.
I agree. I mean, he went off with a knee ligament deal and never came back, and they were never the same. Although, let's be fair, they did win a game without him, and played pretty good defense in the loss to the Dutch.
Yeah, that was a sadness. He's so impressed. He was doing the right thing. You could see his heart. You could see his leadership. That team really missed him.
I guess we got a couple of left backs. A left back, a right back, a keeper, and one more striker, if I haven't lost track. Oh, you know who was very good? Was Carlos Salcido, Mexican, outside back.
Mm-hmm.
Went forward, played very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
I want to reserve judgment there. Can you not have an Argentine? I mean, who was really great on that team? Nobody comes to mind.
Heinze had a couple of moments.
A good player, a great outside back, but didn't play that many
games.
Yeah,
he had a couple of moments.
I've got it'd be a shame not to have a Chilean, because I thought they were such an impressive outfit. They really got screwed having to play Brazil. Having to play Spain. They played the best two teams in the tournament, their last two games in the tournament. They played Spain with a chance to win their group and completely turn the tournament upside down, and played the first 15 minutes and absolutely grabbed the balls of the Spaniards. Mm-hmm. The Spaniards were not comfortable, and they had to win to go through. They had to win the game totally on the back foot.
I went to the website of Spain's number one newspaper, El País. And I read the main match reports of that game. And that in other cultures and other countries, and you've been a newspaper writer and a reporter, so you're in the game and a professional trying to do it well. But writing on football is totally different from what we get here in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just totally different. And, there are people who know how to do it, who know how to speak to the flavors and the tides and the essences of a game in a way that we don't find in American soccer reporting. And there was a very well-written, very frank assessment of what happened, and that is that Chile was a bloody nightmare for Spain, who was utterly fortunate to have squeaked past that team and to win, that they, the great favorite coming into the tournament, had been nullified and negated in all that they hoped to do with their play, so well known, by the Chilean team. Lucky, to move forward.
Lucky not just because Chile was very good, but lucky because Chile had a man thrown out in the 30th minute, maybe earlier. And he was a hard man, defensive midfielder who had come on, I guess, to, you know, play physically and not get another guy thrown out for the next round because they were definitely going through. Got himself thrown out. I believe his name was Gonzalez. And then, you know, playing.
It was
Spain,
a terrible call, too, Hal. Let's face it.
Yes.
It never should have
horrible,
happened.
Horrible. I'd forgotten all about it until now. It was a phantom.
The fix is in there. It was awful.
It was weird. It wasn't a fix. It was too weird because the referee had completely turned his back. He must have gone to his linesman.
Nah. You know, there's so much corrupt stuff happening in this tournament. We've seen it for a couple of tournaments now. There are just huge stakes involved. And you can't have Chile beating Spain. And you just can't. And so one way to truly ensure the unlikelihood of that is to move them a man down with an hour's left of football.
Well, it was
a terrible call. It was a great injustice.
It was a great injustice.
Did you come up with another couple of favorites?
I think I'm going to go with Carlos Salcido, the Mexican right back. And I'm going to go with Maicon as my left back. Because I think he was more dangerous than Ramos and is overall just a better player than Ramos. Now the question is, who is the other striker with Forlan?
Well, you mentioned...
I have two suggestions here that I want you to ruminate on, okay? One is a shout-out to my Asian boys, because I think Honda, the Japanese striker, was outstanding.
Is he the blondie?
Yes.
I think that he was good, but, you know, Bluto, I think that he wasn't fine enough, and repeatedly, and he got subbed for in the final game, huh? And that repeatedly he came close, but no cigarrillo. And also in his crucial and closest moment, and I did see the final game, he blew el momento del gol, la ocasión del gol. He had his real deal chance, and he didn't get it done.
How about Gian, the Ghanaian? He was very good.
Was he the guy who missed the penalty kick?
Yes.
He did so poorly on that, and he had many opportunities. He showed a lot of heart. Hey, bro, let's go back to Forlan's companion. I actually think that he was the guy who most impressed me.
Suarez.
Yeah.
He was very good.
And also, he gets an honorable mention for moving his team ahead because he kept the ball out of the goal, which is what you have to do. There's no place there for honor and for doing the honorable thing. You got to keep that fucking ball out of the net. His teammate tried. The defender,
right,
but didn't touch the ball, and Suarez did, and it paid off.
I'm glad that you said that, because there has been chatter about how that wasn't honorable, and that was Thierry Henry all over again, and they're not.
No, it wasn't that. It wasn't Thierry Henry.
No, it was desperation in a freaking World Cup quarterfinal. You do what you have to do.
Absolutely.
Always. It doesn't even have to be a World Cup quarterfinal. It's just a reaction. I mean, you can hardly stop yourself from doing it.
It's also smarts.
Yes.
He was bloody fucking smart there. And he was in the place he needed to be. I think, Al, that I can't think of another striker. I didn't see as much as you did. But that guy, and I think he had one of the best goals of the tournament. You know, that ball he bent far from the left side and in the rain.
Are you willing to do that at the expense of a single African on our all-tournament team?
Ah, now you're pulling my heartstrings.
I've struck the fucking marrow with that question.
Yeah, that's right. You're hitting me where it hurts.
I'm a professional, Steven.
Yes. Yeah, you are.
I do this for a living.
And ruthless. Who was the best African player in the tournament, Bluto?
I thought it was Gian, or I thought it was Kevin Prince-Boateng, who I'm willing to replace Muller with at right halfback on my all-tournament team.
What team did he play for? Forgive my asking.
He played for Ghana. He's the guy who scored the goal against... he scored the first goal against the Americans. Gian scored a brilliant goal to win the game.
Oh, that was... Boy, was that a great goal, that blast.
You know that I found out from one of our fellow podcasters, Tom Wadlington, that your fellow Berkeley Cal Bear, that moment, that was the moment of the tournament for the United States when Bocanegra sort of went shoulder to shoulder with Gian in the box in overtime and really gave that guy a very legal and very substantial knock.
Yes.
And Gian righted himself and just buried it.
That's right.
Those two guys are teammates on Rennes in the French First Division. Did you know that?
No.
Neither did I. I thought that was awesome.
I think I'd read it but forgotten. Nothing I knew. That was a great goal. That was an able. He wasn't at his best, the defender, but he kept just shy. I mean, he fouled him, but not so much. And there we saw what so often happened, didn't happen in the tournament, and that was the attacker really fighting in the moment. Mm-hmm. You're making the right play and keeping his feet, not leaving his feet, finishing his idea and finishing. that was a great and an exciting soccer moment, and I'm so glad it went that way, as you know, a little different than you and Tom. Reminded of that, and because that poor man is going to be carrying a harrowing sorrow all of his life for having missed that penalty kick, then, you know, you swayed me to move him onto the team. Who else comes to your mind? Because you're remembering more, Hal. And then we'll have to speak to the final. I've got a couple of questions for you.
Sure. I think that's about it for me. I would say that the only thing that I would have Forlan and Gian as my two strikers with Schneider behind. And they really, the only other hole is right midfield. And if I remove Muller, which means that there's no German on this team, and it's a shame not to put Ozil in, but he plays the same position as Schneider.
How good do you think Schweinsteiger was in the tournament?
Not bad. Not good in the final, but really not bad overall. Let me just finish. I would say Prince Boateng. I might have two Ghanaians on that team. They're two best players, and either Muller or Donovan could be the right back. But there was a lot written about Schweinsteiger. He only played because Balak didn't, or rather, he only played defensive midfielder because Balak didn't. And I thought he did a creditable job. And I guess I was a little confused because people were crapping on him for not doing much in the final. But the dude is the defensive midfielder. He's not going to be orchestrating when he's dealing with the Spaniards on his freaking ass for 90 minutes. When they beat England, 4-1, and they beat Argentina 4-0, he was the defensive midfielder. He was able to orchestrate and was able to, to defend and did his job both ways. I mean, you can't ask
anymore. Complete.
Yeah,
he was complete.
But,
who was the best Argentinian player in the tournament, did you think, Hal?
Well, like you, I thought, I know Heinze always impresses me with his guile, I mean, and that's being kind. He's a motherfucker. He's really not an honorable player in a lot of ways.
Well, you've got to be as a defender.
Yeah, but he's outstanding. I mean, he's outstanding. And I thought Mascherano was pretty darn good. Messi was dangerous like Ramos, but never did anything. And I thought that their guys, Higuain, their big striker, was good. I'd never really seen him play before. So I was impressed with his strength and speed.
I thought Messi was great on the ball in the times I saw. You know, he right there, he wasn't able to put it in the famous back of the net. But I thought Messi was just fantastic, and he is non pareil. I think Messi could be the midfielder.
He could be. Well, you know, it would certainly make sense to put him at left midfield. And who was on? Who do we have on the left? Robin, and have him play on the right, coming in from the other side. That's good.
They are. The Robin is occasionally called the European Messi, right? By some.
He's a special player, but he's a hog. You know, there's a word that we don't really use as adult soccer fans. When I was a kid, and you were trying to disparage somebody, you'd call them a hog, someone who did not pass it, someone did not play with their head up.
Let me teach you the Spanish on this, how you'll love it, and so will our vast listening audience. Chupar in Spanish means to suck. So here's another aside. The nickname in Spain for Monica Lewinsky was La Chupinski. Chupar means to suck. Pelota is ball. Un chupa pelota,
un
a ball
chupa
hog.
Pelota. Right. C-H-U-P-A-R?
Chupar, that's the infinitive of the verb, right. Ball hog in Spanish. Chupa
nice.
Pelota.
That's excellent. But he is, you know, he is one in a way that you don't ever begrudge Messi the time he spends on the ball. But with Robin, it is much more self-serving. It's more dangerous in a way because he's always running right at you. Such a difficult player to mark. And, you know, I think that we were watching the final with my friend Jamin and his son Taylor.
Hey, right on.
That's right. And someone was, I think maybe Taylor was picking on Robin quite rightly for being a ball hog. But, you know, this is what the breakaways are made of. This is, you know, why the guy, he's relentless. And he runs at you until you are too tired or not paying attention just enough. And he's by you. And he could have won himself a World Cup final if he had buried one of them. I mean, that's
very crafty. And he had a great season because, you know, he was part of the Madrid sold off some of their expensive players to.
It was a Galactico.
To buy Ronaldo, yeah. Cristiano Ronaldo. And they sold Robin. And what did he do? Well, he delivered Bayern into the final with his goals.
That's right. So
right.
I haven't come right out and asked you, are you on board with all the discredit that people are heaping on the Dutch for the way they played, or do you understand they were just trying to win the game?
Oh, of course. That's what they were doing, and we knew they would do it. I wanted to ask you this, bro. What do you think the proper call should have been on you and your mate in talking about him, identified that the black Dutchman, De Jong, I think, as
De
a pit bull.
De Jong.
Yeah, what do you think was the proper call there for the way he addressed the Basque Xavi Alonso? mind you, the reputation across Spain and of the Basques and Basque men and is that they're especially tough individuals. And you want to stay away from a drunk Basque. Let me tell you.
Because he might
experience.
Put a cleat in your sternum.
Yeah, what did you about that play, Hal? What do you think the proper call should have been there?
Well,
by the ref.
You know, if the referee had seen the replay as I did, he would have thrown him out. It would have been an immediate red card. But I have to admit that I was sort of sitting off to the side next to Taylor. I could have had a better view of this gigantic TV we were watching the game on, but we had a lot of people in the room, and I was anyway. But when it happened. I thought I was actually angry at all the Spanish players crowding around Howard Webb, the British referee, you know, waving their hands, asking for a card, because I just hate that gesture. I think it should elicit an immediate yellow card. As soon as you hold your hand up like that and try to influence the referee to give someone a yellow, you should get a yellow. But I have to say that when they showed the replay, I mean, it was a horrible foul. And if I had seen it clearly, the way it would appear that Webb saw it clearly, I'd have thrown him out. But you have to understand. I mean, if that guy had thrown out a Dutch player 30 minutes into that game, he was ending the game. And I don't think the referee wanted any part of that.
Well, of course,
no one would.
Of course, but I mean, this was a shocking play, and one that of a kind that you've hardly ever seen on a soccer field. The only thing I can remember is, you know, when Eric Cantona dealt with that fan. You know that? Jesus fucking Christ, man.
Well, that's, you can be fooled into spiking somebody. But I have to agree. It's like when I looked at the replay, it wasn't a question of whether he should have been thrown out. Clearly, it was a red card offense. My question is, what was De Jong thinking?
What was he trying to do?
Exactly.
Indeed.
What was he? How did you get duped into looking so clumsy that you did this?
How was he playing the ball? Was he playing the ball?
Yes, the ball was.
How conceivably was he playing that ball? What was he going to be doing with that ball?
I don't know. But to commit that sort of foul is egregious for its foolishness in a normal game, in a pickup game. To get caught doing something like that in the center of midfield, 10 yards from the referee in a World Cup final, I just don't understand how you can be that reckless.
All the more reason, I think, there your ideas that it really ought to have received a red card. over the top. It was so damaging. And what's more, sadly, is it had its effect, because I was very concerned as that game went to halftime. And
Do you really think that it changed the game in that way? I don't. I think that they still controlled the game for the most part. It certainly didn't deter Xavi from running the show. Alonso was well up the field. I mean, it was in the attacking third almost. I don't know what he was doing there. But my question really was, like your question was, what was he thinking? Because it wasn't an imminent scoring chance. It wasn't like the tail end of some incredibly heated sort of battle over the ball where someone lost their head. It was out of nowhere. But I have a question. When it happened, live time, did you see it? And did you say, what the fuck, that's a red card? Or did you have to see the replay like I did?
Well, so unusual for a soccer game. So egregious. Yeah, I saw it.
I didn't.
And it was confounding. And then quickly, everyone around saw it. And, you know, the Spanish, and sure, we can speak of the exaggerated and exaggerating postures that teammates will take on towards something that happens, an incident or a moment that happens in a game, because they're thinking of the bottom line. You know, of trying to get an advantage, but there was a unanimity to the response that also was immediately noticeable. Jesus Christ, man, they had all recognized something that was beyond the pale.
I think that when you do throw a guy out in a game like that, there's the natural tendency is to try to even that game up, and the next time somebody does something stupid on the other side, you might get a break, and that he might get thrown out as well. But the reality is that the Spanish hardly have fouled anybody, and they won the fair play award. I think they got a yellow card until that game, and it was dubious.
One final note on this red card is that wasn't a red card. But Hal, can you imagine, had the red card been given, can you imagine arguments against it having been given? As arguments that would hold water?
Not once you see the replay.
Right. So that, because, you know, we've talked back and forth about this quite a lot now. And, you know, you've ably done so on your part. But had that red card been given, it is the, I mean, who would have objected to that? A Dutch soccer patriot. Oh, no, it should have been a yellow. I mean, I was with Germans during the semifinal of 1982. The semifinal between Platini's French team and Rummenigge's German team.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 1-1 after 90 minutes. And then France scored two goals at the beginning of the 30-minute extra period. Rummenigge got brought on as a sub, and he immediately scored, and Germany tied it up. Do you remember the incident when I just had his name, the German goalkeeper?
Schumacher,
right. Tony Schumacher went out on a French player, and the French were playing such beautiful soccer. You know, they would win the European Cup 2 years later. Platini was recognized as the greatest midfielder in the world. They had a beautiful team, playing a stylish, fluid, beautiful soccer. And Schumacher put a foul on a breakaway on a guy. He broke his collarbone. Do you know that incident?
I know well. That's one that goes down in my book as one of the great matches I've ever seen in my life, top two or three.
Right.
And they did. They went up 3-1, and I believe it was 3-1 when the French, you know, countered because the Germans were throwing everything forward. This is overtime. They were down two goals. And they threw everything forward, and the French got a breakaway against Schumacher, and about 4 or 5 yards on top of the box, Schumacher completely ignored the ball and just put a shoulder into this guy's jaw.
Hip. He put his hip into him.
Whatever.
Yeah.
He killed him.
He could have broken his neck. He almost broke his neck.
And the ball dribbled wide. It dribbled just wide. No penalty. No penalty, no yellow.
I remember. Hal, I watched that in the company of the owner of the largest hotel in Germany at the time. And the general manager of that hotel, I was this young, lucky 16-year-old Northern Californian who talked bullshit his way into getting a summer job teaching tennis at this hotel. And I'm the special guest here with the two main men. And I remember that, and we're all getting drunk, man. I got so drunk. I was 16. And when they saw the replay and their responses and how they recognized, oh, my God, my God, my God, this is one of the worst injustices that football's ever seen. Yeah. This guy should not have his place in the game anymore. So no one in that infamous incident, no one, of course, would have been upset had Schumacher got what he – or would have argued, no, it should be a yellow card. Out of the game, red card.
He copped out in a way that is not unusual. I mean, you've seen it a million times, John.
That's right.
Derek,
but we knew this kind of thing was coming.
Well, and it's not. It's going to be fixed with technology. I mean, every time there's a foul on the edge of the box, the referee is going to find every fucking way to place that ball outside the box or call it indirect. He's gonna find a way not to insinuate himself into the game, and that's right.
Not every time. When that is the right motive. When that's the politic thing to do, depending on the teams, depending on which team is in favor or in contra, that happens, yes, just as you ably described.
But I think that you can't possibly think so politically in the moment. I think that is also an admirable motivation for a referee generally. One of the interesting things about the way I viewed, you know, the final, talked so much to you, and obviously you're such a big Spanish fan, and I really had sort of, as many people I think did, a romantic view of the Dutch team and the Dutch style and the Dutch history in the game, you know, based almost entirely on the way we remember this team from years ago. I think in a weird way, folks our age and maybe even a bit older, you know, romanticized the Dutch and their style because we were introduced to it by Cruyff in the 1970s, or maybe, you know, maybe Hullet and those awesome teams in the 80s that did win a European championship. Those were awesome teams. And the teams the Dutch teams that went down swinging in 94 and 98, you know, to 3-2 to Brazil. And
yeah, that was a great match. I think that was the Pontiac Silverdome, huh?
I think so. I seem to remember it being in Orlando in some great heat, but I don't
know. Okay.
But
that was a great match.
Those days are gone, you know, let's be honest. And, you know, Van Bommel played for Barcelona's European Cup-winning side in 2006. He's not a thug. Robin doesn't dive or ride around any more flamboyantly than anyone else, you know, like Ramos and Iniesta. But, you know, the Dutch did what they had to do to win the match, and it wasn't pretty. And I think that turned a lot of people off. They wanted more from the Dutch in terms of style. But that was never going to happen because the Spanish are better than them, and they knew it. And I guess the only regret I have is that now that, you know, I rooted for the Dutch to beat the Brazilians, but now I wish they hadn't because I would love to have seen a Spain and Brazil final. Because I think the Brazilians would have stood up to them and played a different sort of game against them, and it would have been riveting.
Yeah, that would have been riveting. I thought that it was unfortunate the way they played. We knew it was coming. It was uglier than we even wanted, you know, imagine. And thank goodness that the better team won and the better football won.
I'll go on the record and say that I agree with you, and I'm glad that the best team won. But I just don't think that the game was that ugly. And I think that you certainly can't blame them for to say that. I think I used the word cynical earlier. I don't know that it's cynical to play that game in a World Cup final to try to win a world championship. You do what you have to do to win the game, and it's not like it was some quixotic effort. They nearly did win the fucking game.
They had their chances. Goodness, I even think they had more chances than Spain. Yeah, and it was thrilling. Fuck, it was thrilling. And a fellow West grad of ours, who's a friend of mine, who thought it was the best game he'd seen of the whole World Cup. And I think it was that. I mean, it was a roller coaster, and it was thrilling, and it was scary, and unnerving, and exciting. Quite a final. Go West. Forza Barça.
Forza.
Arriba. Adelante, España. Campeón del mundo. Peace out, mate.
Peace out.